This is an interview being conducted on the 27th day of February, 1975. This is an interview for the Oral History Project with Mr. Harry Snyder. And Mr. Snyder, what is your position with the telephone company?
Commercial manager of the Alliance area.
Commercial manager of the Alliance area, located in the Alliance office. And let's get started with the Alliance office and talk about the time you started and what's happened in that office since that time.
In 1950, on December the 6th, I was transferred from the Akron operation to supervise the Alliance business office functions and relative public relations efforts. And upon my arrival in Alliance, the business office was located at 400 East Main Street. And at that time, we had six people working in the business office, an outside installation repair crew totaling 21 men. We had approximately 140 full-time operators, a chief operator, and three assistant chief operators assigned to work. The coverage was 7 days a week. We offered private, two-party, four-party, and 10-party services for Alliance, Atwater, Marlboro, and Sebring, which is controlled by this particular operation. At the time of my assignment to Alliance, I was told that the telephone company was in a position where a new, complete, modern exchange was necessary to replace one that had been in operation since 1916. And the plans were well underway, and property was purchased at the corner of Arch and Rosenberry to provide building space for a new, all-automatic office, which we refer to in telephone jargon as a central office. This is the building which houses all your switching equipment and your operators. The project was finally launched in 1965 in December. It was completed and the office was cut into operation at 2:06 a.m. November the 13th, 1958. At which time the company on that corner had invested $2,800,000. The office was the most modern at the time, but yet, at the time of its announcement, it was obsolete on the planning board, which goes hand in hand with the Bell Telephone Company's program of planning for tomorrow. The City of Alliance and the Alliance area, when my assignment in 1950, had approximately 9,000 residents, customers, and nearly 1,000 customers listed under business categories. Today, we have in the Alliance area 17,000 customers, over 31,000 telephones, and that does not count the number of businesses, which is in the area of about 1,800 business services.
And this would still be the same area you described earlier. In other words, the boundaries haven't changed.
There's
this is growth.
No change, no growth. The first, and of course, interesting step from a historical standpoint was the extending of free calling to Sebring, which is 6 miles east. On my assignment here, that was a 10-cent long-distance call. And in 1954, that came to end, and we consolidated Sebring and Alliance Exchange and eliminated the long distance. Then to pursue that field a little further, the next addition of any importance to the area was the extension of free calling service between the Atwater and Rootstown exchanges. And then the last two were the privilege of calling Homeworth and the Paris exchange of the General Telephone Company without paying long distance. The most favorable thing to say for the Alliance area has been a continued steady growth. There has never been a major outburst of new customers, but our growth has been steady. We've continued to plug along and keep getting bigger and better, as the saying goes, as the years roll by. And I might at this time point out that during my period of assignment here as a manager, unfortunately nearly a quarter of a century, which will fall on December 6th of this year, our company has invested approximately $13.5 million in telephone improvements in this area. I'm proud to say that there are nothing but private and two-party lines offered for service. There have been many rate adjustments through the period of time most favorable to the customer by eliminating mileage charges. And to quote an example, prior to our cutover in 1958, a private line in the village of Limaville cost $13.50 a month. And now they have the same rate as a customer in the city of Alliance itself. So we have made many improvements. We've gone to the most modern dial switching office. We offer touchstone telephone service, which was the second exchange in the state of Ohio to have it. And it's been well received. At present time, we have approximately 3,000 touchstone customers in the Alliance area. And keeping in mind, at the present, it's only offered in the Alliance exchange. So we have worked and tried to come up with the most modern conveniences that the communications industry has to offer to the general public, and at the same time provide excellent telephone service of top-notch quality.
Now, in your period that you're covering here, we talked about the 1950 situation when you had 9,000 customers and you had 6 people in your business office and 21 men on your installation crew and 140 full-time operators. Now, with your increase from 9,000 customers to 17,000, how has the staff situation changed?
The staff situation has changed rather strangely. Our requirement for outside men has increased to where we have installing and repairing telephones and maintaining our equipment. We have approximately 38 people involved in that assignment.
When you say people, excuse me, do you mean men and women?
Men and women. And may I know at the present time we have no female installers, but that's next. The operator force as such, and I regret to say this, is we, as of 2:06 a.m. March 2nd, 1975, telephone operators in Alliance will become a thing of history.
How many do you have now?
We have 11 working now, and at that time there'll be no more. The people at work have all been transferred to other jobs and absorbed within the company. There's been no one lost a job over this. But a major factor behind this is the cost of doing business in today's marketplace. 85% of our income, 80-85% of our income is tied up in wages. And as wages go up and the demand for higher wages increases, the company must find means of meeting its obligations, and doing so being fair to the customer, the stockholder, and the employees. And unfortunately, automation is the only path that we've been able to find that will provide this out. In other words, today, if we had to maintain a force of operators and without automatic equipment, just as a rule of thumb, yes, it would take us about 640 full-time operators without dial equipment to handle our calls. If we maintained just dial but without direct long-distance dialing, we'd have a force of about 140. And this is another evidence of changing times.
Mm-hmm. How about, now we covered the telephone operators, which are going to be nil. How about your office staff?
We had 6. At present time, the office staff, we have one more person. We have 7 full-time representatives, a manager and an assistant manager mm-hmm. in the office.
In effect, then, this is kind of the termination of operations here in Alliance?
It is, as far as the long-distance operator is concerned. As far as I can see in the future, we will always have people working in Alliance. Our workload here requires daily that we have a minimum of 40 people available, and that is installers, repairmen, construction men, to do the job necessary, an absolute minimum. That would mean that, and I'm thinking too, we're on a 24-hour turn in our offices. We probably better adjust that figure to about 60. So I think that this is not the end of the telephone, it's the end of the operator as such in an era that goes hand-in-hand with the telephone and the picture of the operator putting the calls through in the storm and emergency calls and what have you. But we still have operators, but with the new automated equipment, your operating problems will be handled in the Akron office.
And what does this mean, say, to girls in Alliance or boys who would be considering career as a telephone operator?
Unfortunately, it closes the door.
Completely.
The future in the telephone industry, as far as the operator is concerned, has definitely reached a stalemate. There will be always requirements for operators, but the telephone industry basically is 66% female. The requirement for operators is, and this is all over, In the nearby town of Salem, they closed their traffic operation for 77 operators. And that's completely eliminated all their long distance programming is routed into Youngstown. Mm-hmm. So there will be operators, but the opportunities, especially in a town like Alliance, as far as employment and telephone company, it means that there's 40-some jobs that we just don't have any means of filling.
All right. Well, that tells us something about that career. How about your other opportunities as far as construction work? Now, you mentioned at present
well,
time...
construction installation, as long as the economy is good. Under normal conditions, we normally add a couple new men every 18 months, which is small, but it is a good, steady job, and we are trying to build our force up and maintain it, and we have a seasoned group of veterans now, and in the immediate years to come, they will be forced to retire. Some of them may retire early, which will change this picture, but the main thing it's all based on is the economy of the country and what the demand is for our product. And the fast or continued good growth of the Alliance area.
Mm-hmm. So the operations here, once we cease the operators, we'll have no more operators, we will have installing,
yes,
repair,
bearing,
and some business.
Construction and a business office.
And a business office. But primarily now, most of the operation or operator functions are going to be switched over to automated equipment, which means it will be the Canton office that will...
Into Akron.
Oh, into Akron.
Yes.
Clear to Akron,
Akron
from here.
Yeah.
My word. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the lineman's job with the telephone company. And we're interested to know, from the time you began with the telephone company, you started as a lineman, did you not?
Well, I started as an installer, which installs telephone. A lineman is basically the gentleman who, and I use that term strongly, strong gentleman, who set poles, strung wire, erected cable, pulled cable in underground. And it, frankly, in 1939 when I started in the business, the telephone industry, as far as manpower was concerned, was just exactly what it says, manpower. We did not have the nice modern trucks that we have today to go out and you want to drill a hole to set a pole, you have an automatic auger off of a power drive. It lifts the pole up off the ground on a winch and drops it in the hole for you. 35 years ago, the hole was dug by hand.
Let's try it back at a less volume. I suppose maybe we had the volume
okay,
job. Let's go
happens.
On.
Mm-hmm. The you dug the hole, and then you used pole pikes, and three or four men were necessary to push the pole in the hole, and then you tamped it. Now we have augers, huge earth augers that fit on an automatic drive and drills your holes. We built miles of open wire, which each pole had to be climbed, and if there's a cross arm on it, with one cross arm had 10 circuits, you had to tie down 10 wires. Today we don't pull the cross arms up on the poles. Our goal today is put everything underground eventually. And to cite a specific, in 1972, we removed 168 poles from our at-wire exchange and planted the wires underground. And it used to be you could see a telephone pole, you would think a farmer had a telephone. Now the only way to find out basically is knock on the door and ask if you're searching for a telephone. The whole picture as far as our equipment for our men to work with. When I installed telephones, we didn't know what an electric drill was, a drill through a wall. In 1946, when I transferred into the engineering department, we were starting to get electric drills, although I never was assigned one. I drove a repair truck, an installation truck, for 3 years before I had a heater in it. And that's changed. Now, if it's, the temperature gets under, I believe it's 15 degrees, our line crew doesn't go out to work. They stay in the garage and do things that should be done other times on the trucks. They don't work out in the rain. And this is all a change of what... we have, but you know, we're always looking for things better than what we had, not what we had, and to compare it with the good things today and the baddies we had. We still had a lot of fun. It was good, hard work. I enjoyed it. And one thing about the telephone industry, that once a man went to work for the company, we very seldom ever lost him. We have men with the service up over 40-some years on a job today, and it's been their life. And it's a disease that gets in your blood, and you love the work and the people and what you do, and there's a normal amount of grumbling and griping. That's part of the American pastime to complain, but they were service-oriented, and the customer came first, and that was the most important thing. There have been many changes, but with modernization, mechanization, real nice trucks, better highways to get you around on, easier to work by less of the open wire type construction, which took a cross arm and 10 pins. And I've seen a time with poles with 7 and 8 arms of wire on. You had to climb up through the wire to get up on the top arm to work, and it's all gone. In other words, it's speedier. You don't have the climbers out of your truck as often as you used to have, which were painful sometimes, depending on what you're doing. We use bucket trucks, which swiftly take our men from the ground up on a pole. Without climbing the pole, they don't even worry about falling. They're safe, insulated, and well-guarded, and it's a well-planned operation. Everything's been for the better. If I started out today, I certainly wouldn't want to go back
to
the old method of doing things, believe me.
Do you find with all the new equipment that they have to work with, does anybody keep track of the accident records? Do you have fewer accidents now?
Yes, our accident record is definitely lower. That's one thing with the Bell system complete all over the country in Ohio Bell. Safety first. If there's any question in your mind that you can't do it, do a job safely, you don't do it. And if you need other equipment there, you stop. There's never any criticism of a man or an employee who finds a situation where he doesn't feel he can do it safely. That there would be criticism if he went ahead and injured himself, but if he calls somebody out to help him or call for advice, this is what we want. We furnish safety goggles, safety gloves, safety everything, but that can all be undone by one lack of good common sense and trying to attempt to take a chance. And this is one thing they definitely found on. And we keep an excellent record of accidents, and thank the Lord they're very limited.
Very good. How about any interference or scrutiny that the telephone company has had from OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Act?
Well, I'm happy to say, to date, they made visits of our buildings and find such little things as a ladder rung broken or cracked, a doorway that didn't have an exit sign over, but they have not picked us up on any one major item. They've been minor items, and I regret to say I feel these people are out looking for something, because the emphasis within our own organization is safety, ventilation, lighting, heating, stairs, you name it. And certainly they've got a job to do, and I do think that sometimes you reach the point where you can't see the forest for the trees or vice versa, but maybe somebody coming in giving a little fresh look at it. But we've had no major write-ups from OSHA.
Well, this
we have been inspected, believe me.
Very good. I'm sure all other companies wish that they could have had a similar experience with OSHA.
Oh, it's been a disaster in other industries, there's no question. And again, I'm not critical of them. This is the way of life. This is the way things went on for years. Dad did it this way, and Uncle Joe, and I don't see any reason to change it. Men weren't complaining. Mm-hmm. You stop to think.
Mm-hmm. And in this day and age, I'm sure the men would complain if they had anything to complain about.
No question, there is.
Yes. Then how about your underground cables now that you're putting in lieu of your poles? What's been the experience with repair on these? Is this a better situation, causing less opportunity for damage to those?
This point you just made, less opportunity for damage. Occasionally we'll have a water problem where a cable will crack underground, but through storms, water, we don't have automobiles knocking off our poles. That seemed to be the number one target on the hit parade for any time anyone became inebriated. No matter what they went through, they'd always run up against a telephone pole. And this was a tremendous expense. Going out, erecting the pole, loss of service to customers, and general all-around mess. Now they can leave the highway and run all they want, but they'll never have any effect on us. And certainly we have problems occasionally where undergrounds give us trouble, but in no way will we ever get into the problem that we used to have years ago. For example, a tremendous snowstorm this past fall did affect us here, but the major effect from the snowstorm was the snow and ice falling off of roofs and knocking the service wire off of the house that served the home. We had no major loss of service due to cables or poles falling down because we didn't have that much up in the air. I can recall in 1951 we had a snowstorm over here and we lost the service to complete exchange service. We couldn't call Marlboro, we couldn't call Atwater, and Atwater and Marlboro and Turner isolated. The only place they could call was within their own exchange simply because we had miles and miles of open wire construction. The rain hit on the wires reached a diameter of up to 1.5 inches, 2 inches in diameter, and the weight was too great to support, and down it came. We had crews in here from Toledo, Akron, Canton, Ravenna, alone to help our construction people get the lines back up.
My word.
I would hate to think what would have happened in 1974 if we still had the old-type construction for telephone service.
Yes, quite an improvement. When did they start putting their wires underground?
Well, this has been a program that started in Alliance heavily in 19. There's been a minor part of it for years underground, but the major distribution stuff started going underground about 1954 in conjunction with our new exchange. And we've just continued it right on.
How about if we leave the construction angle and go to the telephone operators again? How about taking us on a little tour?
All right, well, the telephone operator who used to sit years ago originally and wear a great big heavy two-piece headset and a chest-type transmitter that weighed a feel like a ton after wearing around for a few hours and sit there and watch lights blink and buzzers ringing, now sits at a small console. And in the early days, they had to dress immaculate. Today, we dress with the times. Slacks are in order. Blouses are in order. And no question. And they're more comfortable for the girls. And instead of sitting at a desk elevated with your foot on a rail about 12 to 16 inches from the floor, now you sit at a nice desk. You have a row of buttons and keys in front of you, no cords. And you have a real lightweight headset that doesn't weigh as much as a pencil, for which you talk and listen to your customers, and the lighting and the surroundings are 100% better, air-conditioned offices. These today are a far cry from the early telephone operator. For example, the first year I came to Alliance, they had just put air conditioning in the traffic operating room. It used to be a multitude of huge circulating fans like the early Humphrey Bogart pictures, the big fans that swept around overhead. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, when we closed the Alliance Exchange in 1958, some of the fans were still up. Well, they were not in use, of course. But
no, because the air conditioning
was never taken down.
Would there have been also heat coming not only from the warm summer climate around here, but would the equipment generate heat?
The equipment itself in the operating room generates some heat, certainly. Anytime you have lighting, there's heat from light, but it's not heavy at all. Mm-hmm. The biggest would be body heat and the sun itself.
Yes.
Consequently, they have fans blowing all over the place.
Plus, even though a telephone operator was sitting down, she was active. In other words, she was constantly busy to handle
You're busy
the calls.
The thing today, in years gone by, you used to go to put a call through to Chicago, all right? So you get on a Cleveland trunk and you go to Cleveland. Then the operator patches you through to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and then maybe to Chicago. Now you don't do anything. You just stick a plug in and get on the trunk and dial the area code and zingle. You're in Chicago, Wisconsin, California, Michigan, anywhere in the United States, and it's all automatic. And a time, it used to take 10 to 15 minutes to build up a train to make a call completed. You could get from Cleveland to Omaha, Nebraska, and you couldn't get from Omaha to California. And now we're direct dialing overseas calls.
Is that true? I didn't know about the overseas calls. So if I were placing an overseas call in Alliance, it could be handled by your operators who are still here.
Bang, right away. Not only that, customer overseas calls are going to be dialable in the near future, probably within the next 30 days, to certain points in the world.
Right.
I don't know whether this is going to bring on disaster or...
It ought to make some people happy anyway.
It'll make someone happy, certainly. But I've had people often tell me that they've called like their son would be in Hawaii in the Army or something, and they reached Hawaii and talked to them just like calling Sebring.
It certainly brings the world a lot closer.
I had occasion to call Hawaii to an Army post or, no, Marine base. And I talked as if I was talking to somebody in Canton. The mm-hmm. information I needed was received, and it was real quick.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's changes that bring about a lot of benefit. How about your requirements for operators? With the change in equipment, and now that they operate with buttons instead of these
cords
that they used to use, I can recall applying at Ohio Bell in Akron. And wasn't there a requirement as far as the length of your arms? You had to be able to reach a certain distance?
I married a very lovely girl that was turned down as an operator because her reach wasn't long enough. In those days, the girl had to be a certain height and have a certain arm reach so that she could sit at the cord position on the board and take a cord and reach to the nearest jackstrip and without standing up on the rail to reach it.
I see.
And this was one of the problems, and educational requirements have not changed through the years. We do ask for high school graduates. We do have a pre-employment test. As a matter of fact, it's been adjusted to lighten the expectancy from a potential employee, but that part of the job is still the same. The hours are, well, still the same, an 8-hour day or 7.5 hours, and half hour for lunch. That part hasn't changed. I think the hours are more consistent now. We used to work split shifts. You'd go in the morning, work 8 to 12, and be off and go back in at 8 at night and work 11, what they called split shifts. We had to keep the people on the job when the traffic load was up. But our major company's going the direct dialing route, and the less expense to a customer to place a long-distance call, they dial it themselves. We don't need the people. We don't need them at the time. Industry, if industry dials their own calls, it's approximately 50% cheaper than if you go through the operator, and we try to stress this. Again, it's the cost of manpower handling calls, or shall we say lady power, that makes the difference in the rate. Mm-hmm. And we've gone overboard in our advertising to dial yourself, dial direct, save the money.
I think this is very true. Nearly everyone has seen the efforts that the telephone company has made in emphasizing dialing direct in order to save.
I might add one point that we've been criticized for advertising, spending any of the customer's money, but I think this is definitely to their advantage that they know this. And by advertising, I mean by bill inserts, news releases. We release to the television and radio, and it tells a story because the reluctance of people today to read written material. It's astonishing to me to find that 30-35% of the people all ever read an article.
And as a librarian, I can say that's astonishing to me, too. Somewhat depressing, too. Reflects the times and our dependence more on the
visual. Our way of life. Everything's in a hurry. We want it all at once without any effort.
Right, and the emphasis and stress on television and other forms. Well, let's talk about the Alliance community now. Is that... have we pretty much covered the telephone operations that we could
that
talk about?
We hope to continue to be a good, strong part in the community and do our part in the community with the contribution necessary operations in the town and in the area. But also we want our people to be a people person, be a part of the town in which you live. This is one thing that's always been stressed. And countless hours have been donated and company time has been donated on worthwhile community projects. My observation is, after, and I hate to say this again, a quarter of a century in this town, it's come a long way, a long way. When I came to Alliance, downtown Main Street was, I used to kid about the cobblestones, the brick pavement and rough. The J.C.'s took up a project to hot top or asphalt downtown Main Street. That's how it got done.
The and that would have been in the 1950s.
Not behind the thing, and this wasn't done, completed until about 53 or 54. Because I was in a J.C. just as an exhausted rooster when it was finally completed. And that was an asset to the town. The thing that amazes me as I look back is the development of, number one, better highways. Sure, railroads are going by the boards. The essential thing is highway access in and out of the community. The immediate development of the business community on West State Street after the widening of that road out there should be a good criteria for anyone searching for information as to why things should be done.
Then I would imagine we could go from that statement to the assumption that you'd be in favor of widening Union Avenue. This is currently a topic under debate by City
Council.
It's
a current topic. You know, I've spent many hours and weeks and months and years on highways in this area, and I have to withhold any comment on that for one reason. I would never be satisfied to widen Union Avenue if Route 62 is completed north of the town. Then, if it indicates a need for widening, I would be first to want to go along with it. But so many projects are geared up, and people think they have the answers, but the proof, the way I look at it, is always in the pudding. Mm-hmm. If this traffic is routed north of town and there are traffic studies to indicate, there's a lot of traffic on Union Avenue that will never materialize.
In other words, let's not put the cart before the horse.
This is what I'm afraid of. Here we start tearing Union Avenue up, we got other projects that certainly should be looked at before there. I greatly favor, for example, the construction of Mahoning Avenue north to and cross the river and arrive at an access point on North Route 62 to take the industrial traffic from the north end of town, whatever there is,
mm-hmm.
Off of Union Avenue. If the traffic that's now flowing Union Avenue to get onto 62 to go to Canton, shall we say, or go to Salem, if they could just turn north and grab on 62, which we will benefit from in 1975, I hope, then we'll have something as a benchmark. Right now, we have nothing except speculation. Traffic studies made by the State Highway Department does not indicate a tremendous traffic load on 62. along North Union Avenue or Union Avenue. It's heavy now, but the traffic from Elias to Minerva is not that great. I don't have it at my fingertips, but I'll go back to my original statement. I withhold any comment, and I don't think there should be any effort made until we get these other projects out of the way.
Mm-hmm. And until the facts
we
are
started
known.
Out with a five-step project in 1966. One was the completion of 62 from Alliance to Canton. Number two was the North Leg, which is under construction to take Alliance traffic north of town and give an industrial artery for Babcock Wilcox, Transus, Alliance Drop Forge, and any industry in the north end of the community could come in on 62 and drop off at Sawburg and Gwynn and Feed. That's completed, or near completion. The third step was to take it from North Union Avenue to Salem. Part of that's completed, and the drawings are on the way on the other one. The fourth item was the widening of State Street to Mutt and Jeff Hill, which is completed, so we've got that done. The next item of business in the highway program was to encourage work with Stark and Mahoning County on the widening of Mahoning Avenue, taking it across to and across the river east of town, which would give us an artery from present Route 62 at Mahoning Avenue over the new 62 above River Road. And in doing this, any traffic that would come out of any of our industries in the east end of town would have a straight shot to a highway you'd never see on Union Avenue. Mm-hmm. Now, unless there's some great gold mines discovered south of town would require more traffic on Union. I don't favor just going in to tear up the tear, because you've got junior high school, you've got many nice buildings on Union Avenue. At the moment, I don't speak in favor of it. I'm not against it when it's proven to me that it should be.
Right.
You can't stand in the way of progress, but sometimes we get progress out of step with something else.
We should point out, I think, at this time in the tape, while we're starting to talk about these roads leading into Alliance and the work on 62, your involvement with the Alliance Chamber of Commerce, and especially getting this 62 project. Wasn't that what you worked on?
Oh, yes. Yes. It was a great experience. I had a lot of wonderful help. I think of some of the men have departed from this life. Dale Walburn, Russ Kuntzman, worked very diligently on the program and never failed when it was necessary to go to Columbus. We made numerous, and I mean numerous, trips to Columbus to meet with the highway department. The cooperation from the Salem Chamber of Commerce was the greatest, wonderful people. Howard Firestone, George Rogers, Al Cleveland, you name them. They represented the whole community feeling in these meetings. We never had any opposition. There was never any dissension among the group. That's why the project is where it is today.
And exactly what did this project do?
Well, this project took Route 62, which was dumped out in the field over on Route 44, from there to Mutt and Jeff Hill in one shot. And the second link was the project that they're working on right now from Mutt and Jeff Hill to Union Avenue on 62.
And we should locate Mutt and Jeff Hill a little more specifically. This would be
Mutt and Jeff Hill is the extreme west end of the Alliance community. It's about a mile beyond the city limits west Alliance.
Heading west on Old 62,
on Old
or
62,
what is now State
Street.
And that Street
was one of the crookedest, poorest roads I ever traveled in my life. And unfortunately, for many years, I had to travel to 10 district meetings in Canton. Many, many accidents, and it's heaven to get on that road and travel now.
And I think particularly at Mutt and Jeff Hill, this old Route 62 that's now being replaced by a modern divided highway
yes,
came to its probably worst curve, and
right,
many accidents occurred there on
many
that old curved highway.
Many people were killed right there in that Mutt and Jeff,
yes,
curve. For the natives around here, they all are familiar with Mutt and Jeff, but you made a good point. Somebody else, Mutt and Jeff Hill doesn't mean a thing.
No. Any ideas how it got its name? I've never heard.
I never heard. I don't know. I don't know. I guess maybe for the idea from a big one and a little one.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end it was a little dip and then you went up a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, well, that's pure speculation on my part.
It certainly fits. So now 62 is being constructed from Mutt and Jeff Hill to
North Union Avenue.
North Union
at
Avenue.
At Gaskill. And the nicest thing about it is we were approximately 9 11/10 miles of open field from Union Avenue to where we pick up 62 at Salem, and 4 miles of that is already under construction and open, coming from Salem back.
So when we get our construction heading on out of Alliance towards Salem, we're going to meet
You'll
highway
meet
already
right
there.
Right on through Salem, and that, there's two projects down there which will probably, and if money I'm sure will come out of government now, it would have been done, but the government froze $2 billion of the highway construction funds to slow down the inflation. Now they're going to have to do something to build up some employment, and I see where they're going to release the money. and the state matching funds, and I hope the state can come up with the money, because this should rate one of the top priorities.
Mm-hmm. And when 62 continues on out of Salem, we are going
clear
to
through the Pennsylvania border.
And passing through Youngstown?
No, you'll pass south of Youngstown, but you'll have access on the Lakes of the River Road, which I think is referred to as Route 7, the divided highway. You'll link with 7 and you can go north. When this road's finished, you'll be able to go east from Alliance and pick up Route 7 and go to Ashtabula without a traffic light.
Mm-hmm. And then 62 will continue on?
62 will continue on to the Pennsylvania border. This setting, I do not know what the disposition decision is of the Pennsylvania Highway Department on continuing on, but there is something in the wind. I don't know at the moment.
I see. So this will be a nice route for us if we want to cut over to Pittsburgh or
sure. If you want to go to Pittsburgh, it'd be beautiful. If you want to shoot to the turnpike, you can get on and you'll have easy access to the turnpike. And it's going to be the most important thing is the opening of avenues to new industry and new business. Many times while working with the Alliance Development Corporation, or we do it, Alliance Area Development Corporation, as it's known now, industry was always interested in what are your highway facilities. We've got some good answers for them now, and I think that this is going to help.
What is the situation with industry in Alliance right now? Of course, any community, if it's going to live and grow, has to be concerned about bringing in new industry. Are we? You mentioned now we've changed from a railroad town because, of course, the railroad has bypassed this community, so we're developing our highways. Would you classify Alliance as an industrial town?
I would classify Alliance as a well-diversified industrial town. Okay. We no longer are heavy steel. We have electric motors, an excellent plastic manufacturing corporation. We have our old standbys, the heavy industries such as Morgan's and Alliance Machine. The Babcock Wilcox development here has been fantastic with their tremendous research facilities. And the new expansion of the BMW tubular products. The small shops, there are many small job shops in the machine shop field, foundries, small foundries that didn't exist. As far as I'm concerned, I see nothing but good for Alliance.
This, you think, perhaps would help us rather than being tied to being a steel town, for instance, and coming under the fate of whatever happens to the steel industry, we have a better opportunity because of our diversification.
I think right now, I must point out that Transit Williams are still quite busy. At one time, they used to be tied directly to the automobile industry. Well, anyone tied directly to the automobile industry, down 50%. Transits are practically out of it. They're a little bit there in the trucking field, but they're in a lot of other fields, which makes them better prepared to weather so-called dip in the economy, a Republican recession or a Democratic depression. I guess that's how it's priced.
So, for the future, we ought to stand pretty well no matter what happens.
I would say this to me, as long as you've got diversification, you're never going to find any, Armag, for example, former armor industry, they have their ups and their downs, but there's always something going in one of these shops, or the majority of them, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
We're not like, maybe you saw on television, the carpet center of the world is completely flat. In Georgia, I can't recall the name of the town, but they've been affected so strong from this recession that 65% of the people are out of work. There's one plant. The carpet capital of the world is flat because of carpet. The demand is down. Mm. And as long as we have a diversified product, we're better off.
Let's talk a little bit about another aspect of your service to the community, and that is service on the Board of Education. If I remember, you served on the Board of Education president in your term?
I served 3 terms as president. I was on the board 8 years.
From
again.
When to when?
I was on the board from 1960 to 1968. And it was a wonderful experience. I met a lot of wonderful people. I am very proud to have been a part of the improvement of the educational facilities in Alliance. The greatest thing that ever happened in this town was the sealing of the community wounds behind Dr. Hamrick to get this new high school, which we need to take our hat to nobody on. The other thing that I'm very happy to have been a small part in was a follow-up of the vocational training program in schools. While serving on the board, we look at figures of our graduates every year, and at times there are 40 to 41% of them going on to college, which, let's use 40% for example. That tossed 60% of our youngsters out on the unassuming public, not particularly trained for anything. The best lesson in life was a trip to the industrial training shop, which was small at the time, to find that all the youngsters who took machine shop training, some 11 of them, in graduating all had jobs. The young ladies who took typing and shorthand all had jobs. But again, this only amounted to maybe another 4 or 5% of the graduating class. Now, with what facilities are available, we're training youngsters that can go and say, I can do this.
No matter what the job
it
is.
It used to be before, I can't do anything. What do you need?
Let me stop this.
The world we live in today is filled with mechanical monsters. It's reaching the point that the wife in the house can't repair the light plug when it burns off. She can't find a fuse box to replace fuses because there's automatic resets. There's no fuses. There are no fuses. The husband of today, if he isn't equipped to use tools, and you have to call a serviceman into your home to do a job, you might just as well figure you're going to lose part of your day's earnings to put some small gadget back in service that you should be able to fix yourself. And I think that with all the mechanical gadgets around us today, the young man who steps out and becomes a plumber, an electrician, a welder, a skilled mechanic, makes a very good earning, and basically is equipped to stand up and say, I can do the job, and go anywhere and find employment because of his training. And this is a necessary requisite because we know, based upon information from the learned group, that service people are needed to make these machines function. And the more of them are dumped on the public, the bigger the requirement's going to be for this kind of training. And there's nothing finer than a very good craftsman. And we need more of them. And I think as far as the young ladies are concerned, the training to become a dental assistant, which is a good, I'd say a fine job, the beautician, the nurse's aide, maybe she wants to go on into nursing. The basic test into these fields may make a better engineer, a better nurse, a better doctor, a better designer. And this is why I look at the fact that we all cannot come out with a PhD in some particular field and then suddenly we find we know more than what we should and we don't contribute anything to the everyday that we have to face. The need is there, and that's why I've gone overboard on the desires to see our young people trained. I think we should take more emphasis on the field of everyday life, such as more knowledge of commercial law. They should have a better understanding when they sign their name on something, what involvements they can get tied up in. Just explain terms of commercial law or the program of Dr. Wesley Watson did such a wonderful job at through the years in Alliance High School with POD, Problems of Democracy. I participated in a seminar where they had representatives from various businesses talk to the students and hold an open forum, rapid-fire questioning of the participants. I think that through the years, my own children participated. We have three daughters. All of them were in the Problems of Democracy classes. I think one of my daughters took the part as a witness in a murder trial. Another one served as a prosecuting attorney, and I think another one was in some kind of a panel discussion, which we've got to broaden our youngsters in the down-to-earth vernacular of the School of Hard Knocks, that they understand these things, because everything isn't as rosy as painted in books and pictures, and yet it is a wonderful life.
Mm-hmm. Do you suppose maybe the schools now in their vocational training are reflecting the change in the economy or in the emphasis in the job market from one that for a while was so highly geared to the professional, the college graduate? Now, I guess the old advice to go to college because you can earn more money, if that's your sole reason for going, doesn't hold true.
Well, again, I'm proud that Alliance, under the leadership of the various people in the school field, your school board and your superintendents, a fine job done by our president, Superintendent Hamrick, in selling this vocational training, because I think Alliance is head and shoulders above any town around here for miles. You name one community our size that has a tremendous installation in it. Automobile mechanics. This is our way of life. They're going to have to be mechanics. They have a fine shop. And the youngsters have done it. Alliance, Ohio was one of the first cities, the first city in the state of Ohio, to get a grant from the state for vocational training. And that was incorporated in our new high school. And many, many thanks to Miss Susan George, or Miss, I believe it is,
yes,
who was on the State Board of Education, who helped front this, and a tremendous job that one Dr. George Ewing did in selling this program in Columbus, along with Lyle Crist. And
these would be your school board members.
The entire
now.
School board of Bill Steffi and Charles Henson and Dr. Hammack and all concerned. But again, A for Alliance and A for the first, and
yes,
alphabetically, we were to have a line. And the product is there for the public to appreciate, and I'm sure they do.
I think they do. This, of course, we're referring to is the new Alliance High School, which was, let's see, opened 1973, was it, that they opened? When this new building...
72.
72. It's been that long ago. Yes, it was. 1972. You are right. With an outstanding vocational education department. Truly, it is one of the finest.
And in one swoop, we went from rags to riches.
Yes, indeed. Those who remember the old building on Broadway and Arch Avenues can certainly make the comparison.
I'm glad it's a memory because I was always dissatisfied with that building. Of course, you can't do anything. You realize you have to do the best of what you have. And I think we turned out some wonderful products. It isn't what's on the outside or the cover of the book. It's what's inside. And I think the line stands behind no one, and fine young men and young ladies have been turned out, and the fine mark they made in life. Mm-hmm. But it's also nice to have something that
a good facility.
A good facility is right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.